Money FM 89.3, best of weekends.
Gaurav Kripalani, the artistic director of the Singapore Repertory Theatre, joins us on Weekend Mornings. Good morning, Gaurav.
Good morning. Of course I remember Neil.
How could you not?
Happy anniversary.
Well, thanks. We're happy to have you on. And Gaurav, we wish it was a time in history when we could just talk about all happy things and fun things. But, you know, we have a serious crisis on our hand, and the theater community in Singapore is taking it on the chin right now, unfortunately. Where do you stand right now with SRT and the impact that the last few months have had on your theater productions, on your crowds, all that?
Before I do that, I just want to say a big thank you to both of you, because I know last week you had Ivan Heng, Adrian Tong on, and this week you have me, and we're just really grateful that you are showcasing the plight of the arts, because we are in deep, deep trouble, and I don't think people realize how catastrophic the situation is.
Well, let me jump in there, Garth, if you don't mind, because the reason I wanted you guys to come on in the first place is because I've been following the British art scene very, very closely. And to give context for our listeners, I was listening to a Guardian podcast this week that said 70% of British theatres could close permanently by the end of this year. And many theatres in the UK with that long-established theatrical tradition of performance in the UK could go out of business by November. That is how catastrophically serious it is for your industry. Would that be fair?
That's very fair. I mean, I don't think people realise that the majority of the people in the industry, it's a gig economy, right? The directors, designers, actors, stagehands, crew, production team, all work project to project. And the beauty of Singapore is for the people in that group who are very good, they had work a year to 2 years out. So for Shakespeare in the Park 2022, we already had our stage manager in place because that's the person we wanted. So for everyone, that work has vanished overnight.
There's no certainty whatsoever, is there?
We don't know when it's coming back. So it is critical. If people are looking for, you know, as with Wild Rice Pandemonium SRT, we are three of the larger theater companies. And I think one of the things that we are very conscious of is how quickly can we start producing work that will provide employment to as many people in the industry and help our colleagues as well as help ourselves, because our number one priority also is making sure our staff are looked after, the people who work their socks off and who are loyal to us. We want to be loyal to them.
Of course, crises often, you know, lead to innovation, and sometimes that's a good thing, and sometimes it doesn't work out the way you'd like it to. But as you look at this moment in time for SRT, how can you innovate your way out of this or through it? Can that be done?
So one of the things the National Arts Council did is they created a digitization grant. And, you know, as you'll hear, it's not the same. The reason our industry is in crisis is the whole point of the arts is that communal bonding experience of bringing people together and that cathartic experience of being that shared experience. You're not going to get that on a digital platform. But having said that, SRT created something called Coronalogs Silver Lining, which was we commissioned 9 writers to write a monologue about living in Singapore during COVID. We hired 9 actors to perform them, directors, crew. So we were able to give a tiny amount of money, but at least we'd be able to do something. So it became the first show produced for this period. And that's gone down incredibly well. Our little company, we have Playhouse every Tuesday for kids. So we're trying to see what content we can create for children. With Shakespeare in the Park, which will happen in February, I think every day we seem to be buffeted by new news. So we have canceled 7 productions this year. The rest of the year is a write-off. So we decided we're going to concentrate on Shakespeare in the Park in February 21 because it's outdoors, you picnic, you can put your picnic blanket as far away from the next person as you like. And then we were told, you know, the chances of us being able to have 2,000 people outdoors, even outdoors, is highly unlikely.
Wow.
So, you know, that threw us for a loop. So now we're trying to figure out how do we do Shakespeare in the Garden for 50 people, because I think outdoors is still the way to go. But we have to reinvent that model. But, you know, if you look at, even if you charge $50 a ticket for 1,000 people, that's $50,000. That's not going to pay 25 people's salary.
Can you do, like, when you think about that, though, can you do a higher value product? You know, so maybe it's $100 a ticket, but it includes dinner and, you know what I mean? If you can you make that so it's a smaller number of people to keep physically distant, but make it a higher end product? And I know that might go against kind of what your ethos is at SRT, being accessible to people. But, you know, just given where we're at in reality, is that kind of thing possible? Or even using virtual reality, right? Have an immersive experience with a VR headset on or something like that.
Absolutely. I think we're right now, we're open to everything. We are creating a production that we are going to do in people's homes. We will roll out when we're allowed to be in people's homes. We are creating our outdoor production of Shakespeare in the Garden for 50 people. We are creating exactly what you just described, digital content that is a hybrid of having both people in the room as well as watching virtually. So yeah, you know, we are trying to reinvent. I think one of the big areas that we are going to have to ramp up is we have an amazing corporate training program. We have facilitators who use theatrical techniques to work with companies to train their staff. I think that is going to become a major source of revenue for us until we can get back in a theater.
Yeah, on that point, I think it's important to put in a bit of context. I was talking to someone this week who I didn't agree with, but they were about this and about the interview we did last week with Adrian and Ivan, and they said, art scene always complaining, typical Wayang, everything's a crisis, every other week there's a crisis, and so on and so on. But I think it's very important for you, especially being the artistic director of the SRT, to put it into context, because people have been saying to me, once we get through phase one, most businesses will be open, not understanding the fundamental business model of how theatre, live performance and getting bums on seats actually works. So maybe you can explain the kind of people you need in your theatre to even break even, and where you stand with your understanding at the moment with phase two and what that means for you.
My understanding at this point, and, you know, in fairness to the government as well, nobody knows, right?
Correct.
We're all learning day by day. So there isn't my understanding at the present is theaters will not open till phase three.
Right.
So if we have phase two for the rest of the year, phase three, in essence, for us to be fully operational again, we are going to need to be able to be in a closed environment safely. So that is going to take a while. So in the interim, we will have to do social distancing in the theater. So the Casey Arts Center, which is our home at Robertson Quay, we have 380 seats. Mm. If we do social distancing, that means every two seats in between are going to be empty. Every alternate row is going to be empty. The first row will have to be empty to distance yourself from the actors on stage, which means we go from a 380-seat theater to an 80-seat theater.
Mm. Yeah, that's the interesting part. I think people sometimes don't understand the nuts and bolts of your mechanics of this, you know?
So it's going to be, so there's no, you know, an 80-seat theater, we might be able to do a one-man show. We will do a one-man show once we're able to do that to bring people together. The one silver lining that I'm getting is the number of people I meet who say they cannot wait to be back in a theater is incredibly gratifying.
Mm.
People are craving that communal experience. And I think we are all in the industry counting on that there are going to be enough people who are going to say, you know, we are going to be there to support you.
Very interesting. Talking with Gaurav Kripalani, Artistic Director at Singapore Repertory Theatre. And Gaurav, this moment in time has also brought about different models for philanthropy and brought that out to the conversation now around arts and giving. What have you seen happening in that space?
One of the most innovative things I've come across is there was a New York Times article a couple of days ago about the huge foundations in the U.S. that are borrowing money and issuing bonds so they can give out more money. The article basically said foundations generally give out 5% of their money every year. And they're realizing that in this critical time, that's not enough. So the Ford Foundation has led this initiative, and they've got Kellogg and Mellon and Doris Duke coming on board. Ford borrowed $1 billion. And their logic was that interest rates are so low that it will be cheaper for them to do that, and they'll still earn more on interest, that they are able to do that, pay that off. In essence, they're taking the equivalent of a mortgage for 30 to 50 years. But that allows them to then give out 10% now. And that equates to, if they gave out $500 million last year, they can give out $1 billion now. And it's revolutionary. People are jumping on board. But I think people realize that this is unprecedented.
Could that happen here in Singapore, that model? Do you think it would be?
And just to add to that, that's a fascinating point, because we just spoke to the Speaker of Parliament, Tan Chuan Jin, and one of the things that the government has to grapple with at the moment, of course, is they only have so much in the rice bowl and what funding can be attributed to what need. But if I understand it correctly, you're speaking more about corporate sponsorship here, aren't you, rather than just government funding?
I'm talking about more about foundations, because corporates, fortunately, realize that they can do something to help. And please, I think we're all cognizant of the fact that everybody's hurting. Every industry is bleeding. There's nobody except maybe Amazon and Netflix. Nobody else is spared. So the idea now that everybody needs help, and I think he's right. There's a pie, and how you divvy that up. But I just found this article inspiring, because it does find a solution to how we can channel more money to the arts. And I think one of the key things that we need to do is, we meaning the arts industry, is how do we tap these foundations? How do we support giving to the arts? Because how do I put this? Healthcare and education, there are a lot of people that will support that. And now, I mean, healthcare now, especially, right, with COVID. We just need to educate foundations and corporates and public that the arts desperately need your help, and that we are an essential service. I mean, if you look at what's happening, everybody is watching content online. One of the things that was, there was suddenly this plethora of shows you could watch. I mean, the number of people who watch Phantom of the Opera online, everybody watches what the National Theatre is producing every week. We've had thousands of people watch Coronalogs online, but we're also reaching a level of fatigue. I mean, I'm on firefighting on Zoom calls all day long. Right. By the end of the day, I'm kind of don't want to be looking at a screen. So we need to look at how do we keep people engaged, and how do we make them realize that we desperately need money now.
Garv, much of your year is spent on the road, traveling around, looking at productions in London and New York and elsewhere. And I know this from past conversations we've had. Obviously, all that's stopped for you at the moment. But your contacts in all of these other cities are very deep and longstanding. What are your friends, your colleagues, your contacts overseas saying about how they are trying to get through this strange time where so many people are being impacted in the theater industry?
I actually speak to people around the world every day, without exaggeration, because I wear two hats. I also am festival director of the Singapore International Festival of Arts. And so I'm talking to festival directors, I'm talking to artists. And one thing that has come out of this is, boy, has this brought everybody closer together. We're all in the same boat. And it's brought all of us. I sit on countless sessions of what can we do? And there's some, the people have got very innovative ideas. It's exciting to see. It's actually gratifying to be able to talk to people. And sometimes it's just cathartic for ourselves, even if it's a session of an hour. So I'm on the board of an organization called the International Society of Performing Arts. And we had a session last Friday where, in essence, 50 of us were on Zoom having a drink, just commiserating with each other. And that just, it was just so cathartic to know that globally it's the same problem. But we're in it together. We know we're going to come out of this together. And what we need to do is work as an ecosystem to support each other. And I think especially in Singapore, that is happening. I know the arts groups are talking to each other about how we create work to support everyone. So whether it is something like drive-in theater or a drive-in concert, in our case, what we're pushing for is a bike-in concert because we also want to be green-friendly with everything that's, and we're looking at one of the things about theater is beyond entertainment, which is very important. Theater is a mirror to society. Theater is, we do theater to reflect the times we're living in. And we have a lot of issues to address. There's COVID, there's the migrant worker situation. I think if you look at what's happening in the U.S. in terms of race relations, how do you relate that to what's happening in Singapore, which has its own issues? And we need theater to highlight these issues, to bring people together to discuss them. So I think all that is actually in the works and happening, which is exciting. We just need to find a way to pay for it.
Absolutely. You were talking to Gaurav Kripalani, the artistic director of the SRT. On that point of a united artistic community sharing, if you took it a bit wider, and this is slightly more contentious, I was very interested in what the British director Sam Mendes said recently, of course, that Netflix, you mentioned it yourself, Netflix, Amazon, the other streaming services are some of the cable television, are some of the few industries on the planet that are enjoying boom times because we're locked indoors. When, of course, theatre is an incubator for the talent that we are literally watching right now on the UK, on streaming services. If you look at any movie on Netflix right now, you're going to see Benedict Cumberbatch, Eddie Redmayne, Gary Oldman, Sir Anthony Hopkins. We can go right through the list, all of which started in the theatre. So Sam Mendes' point is, should some of those streaming services contribute in some way financially to the incubator to keep that production line of young talent coming through the theatre, i.e. give them some money? Where do you stand on that?
I think everybody's universally behind Sam on this. He directed three of the shows that we were involved in. We did The Bridge Project, which was Winter's Tale, Tempest, and Richard III. And so everybody is rallying around what Sam said, because he's right. If there's a way to find the companies that are doing well. I mean, it's not just all those amazing actors you mentioned. Think about all the underscoring that you see in every TV show. Who created that music?
Yeah.
The entire music industry that supports that too. So it goes right through the ecosystem. So I think if what we need to do here in Singapore is exactly what you said, is find companies that can help. And the key thing with Sam's article was, and Sam's comments was, it's not about getting a handout. It's about how do we work together? How do we look at it as an investment? How do you take a royalty on future incomes if you invest in a show now? So I don't think we are at an interesting stage, because one of the key things that we are so dependent on the government to bail out this industry. I think without government help right now, this industry is finished. But beyond that, they're responding. So there is this $55 million the government has set aside to help the arts. That is going to help us in phase one. There, we're going to have to appeal for more in phase two. If the government can stabilize the industry, I have great faith in all of us being able to battle ahead.
I just have to follow up very briefly, because what you said there is amazing, extraordinary. You know, without government support, we could collapse. Just briefly, how are your conversations going at the moment with the likes of NAC and other government agencies?
And the National Council has absolutely rallied. I think that, of course, it's frustrating because in our heads it's not happening quickly enough, but I'm also conscious that everything's happening in real time and everyone's learning in real time. So they're adapting daily to the changing situation. So they are doing everything they can at this point, and they are trying to help channel as much money to individuals as possible. And the conduit to do that is your major. So we have the major arts grant recipients, which are about 18 companies in Singapore. I could be wrong on that number, but it's in that ballpark. And by channeling money to them so that we can create work, that we can employ people, they are actively trying to help them do that. And the same with CIFA, the arts festival, is they're really looking at how we can create. The immediate solution is digital content, right? How can we create work online that will produce work? The pushback, of course, is we're not an online media. You know, we're not film production. But for now, we will do it because it creates work and it helps keep the arts top of mind. So I think, in fairness to the National Arts Council, and they've kept this $55 million waiting to see how the job support scheme of the government pans out. When it stops, then they have that to deploy to keep the industry sustained. So I actually think they're really trying their best to keep us all alive. But that is the critical thing. Keep us alive. I mean, it's that serious.
Gaurav, thank you for your time today and your insights. And we're, of course, going to be touching base with you again in the future to see how everything is going. But appreciate your time on Weekend Mornings.
Thank you so much for having me. Go to srt.com.sg to check out what we're doing and how you can support.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.